for bilayer systems, there is always interlayer tunneling. For example, in wide quantum wells of gallium arsenide, the charge distribution has two peaks. Each peak can be viewed as one layer. So we have two layers in this picture. And if we apply a perpendicular magnetic field, we can obtain quantum Hall phase. For example, we can tune the magnetic field to reach 330 state, two independent one-third Laughlin states. But always, electrons can move between these two layers. So there is always tunneling between two layers. Indeed, experimentalists can apply an in-plane magnetic field to reduce this tunneling. So applying an in-plane magnetic field causes momentum mismatch, and that suppresses the tunneling. So we have control over the value of interlayer tunneling. So taking the effect of interlayer tunneling is an experimental fact. And as we will see in this talk, it has a serious consequences. When tunneling is very small compared to the bulk gap, we have a very good understanding of the situation. We obtain the 330 state, which is just two decoupled one-third Laughlin states. We know that the system is abelian, and if we wrap it on a torus, the ground state degeneracy will be 9. When tunneling is very, very strong, we also have a good understanding of the problem, because in this case, we basically treat the system as a single layer instead of being two layer, because tunneling is very strong and we don't have a good notion of two layers. So we have a single layer with two-third filling factor. And again, it is abelian, is described by the particle hole conjugate of the one-third Laughlin state, and its ground state degeneracy is 3. So in both extreme cases, we obtain an abelian state. And immediately we may ask, what happens when tunneling is of the order of the bulk gap? Intuitively speaking, we expect in this regime the bulk gap to close and reopen in a different topological sector. And one question is, what is the ground state degeneracy of this phase, whether it is abelian or non-abelian, and these types of questions. And in this talk, I will try to convince you that actually this intermediate phase is described by the Fibonacci phase, which supports Fibonacci anions with which can perform universal quantum computation. And the second important motivation for this work comes from some potential applications of the non-abelian excitations in making quantum computers. So the main idea is that when you have non-abelian excitations, the ground state is not unique, even if you fix the position of quasi-particles. So for a given coordinates of quasi-particles, the ground state is non-degenerate, and we can imagine this degenerate state as a quantum memory. And when we braid these quasi-particles, when we move them around, then we make a unitary transformation on the ground state. In other words, we mix different ground states. You can start with ground state number 1, but when you braid these quasi-particles, you get a superposition of different ground states. So braiding acts like a unitary transformation. And this is just the building block of any topological, of any quantum computer. But because braiding is something topological, this quantum computer is immune to local disorder or interactions or thermal fluctuations. But not for every non-abelian state we can make the so-called universal quantum computation. So any quantum computer that we need to design should be able to do some basic operations. And some of these operations can be made without error. I mean, error is exponentially small, so we call it topological, but some of them we cannot. For example, if you have ising anion, some of these operations can be made topologically, but some of them, like phase gate, we cannot make it topological, and it has some error. But with Fibonacci anions, we can make all those quantum operations and all those quantum gates topologically without any error. I mean, error is very, very small. So we can make universal topological quantum computations with Fibonacci anions. And this system, we believe, can give us Fibonacci anions. And this is another strong motivation for us to study the bilayer system with interlayer tunneling. I don't know the answer for that question, but for Majorana fermions, with four, we can do it. Yeah, but with Fibonacci anions, I don't know how you can make this, but I know that it's doable. Yeah. Do you know how many we need Fibonacci anions? How many Fibonacci anions do we need to make a control knot, you said?
I don't know, yeah.
You don't know? Yeah, with Majorana fermions, four is enough. You can braid two and three, and you get the C naught.
I think the phase of Fibonacci anions is a little strange. You probably need to have many of them to obtain some simple phase like a carbon four.
Right.
So this kind of approximation.
Okay, and this problem of taking interlayer tunneling into account has been previously studied, and Professor Wen has a number of very interesting papers on this problem. So as always, let's start with symmetry considerations. A bilayer quantum Hall system has U1 cross U1 cross Z2 semiproduct with Z2 symmetry. The first U1 is responsible for the electron number conservation in the top layer, and the second U1 describes the electron number conservation in the second layer. When there is no tunneling, they are both conserved. And the Z2 represents the layer exchange symmetry. If we exchange the layer index 2 and 1, the system does not change. So if we gauge this Z2 symmetry, then what we obtain is actually U1 level 3 mod Z2 orbifold CFD. For this particular value of compactification radius, the system is identical to Z4 Reed-Rezaei state. This state is non-abelian, but we cannot use it for universal quantum computation. And the wave function that we get from this approach is the product of wave function for the top layer and for the bottom layer, but we anti-symmetrize over the positions of these electrons. In this way, we obtain the wave function, and Professor Wen and his collaborators have shown that this wave function agrees with the fermionic Z4 Reed-Rezaei state. In this talk, I will not treat this Z2 layer exchange symmetry as a gauge symmetry. I assume it's just an overall global Z2 symmetry.
This is not what you're going to talk about, but do you know what is gauging means in this context? Gauging Z2?
Gauging Z2 means,
physically, this Z2 was the symmetry between the two layers.
Right.
So what does it mean to gauge it?
One consequence of that is that the current operator, which usually is considered to be a descendant field, not a primary field, becomes a primary field, and that generates this Z2 symmetry. So at the level of CFD, you can see that. But physically, I guess one way to have this gauge Z2 is to not have a uniform tunneling in the sample. Instead, we have tunneling along some lines, and at the end of line, you get the so-called parafermion zero mode. So in that way, you can act on the system with this Z2 exchange symmetry locally around the the end of those lines. So in that way, I guess you can make this Z2 a gauge symmetry when you don't have uniform tunneling. That makes sense for that case. But when you have a uniform tunneling, then I think having a global Z2 is more natural.
You know, before top layer and bottom layer are different, one is up, one is down. So now here we forcefully treat this as identical particle, means that we undersymmetrize even between up and down electron. And that's it. That's one way to think about the gauge. So there's no distinction between up and down anymore. That's it.
Okay. So in this talk, I will try to present three different arguments that can give us some information about the problem, and we will see how miraculously we get the same answer from these three distinct methods. And then I will talk about some generalizations of the problem. So the first method was thin torus limit. Let's start with the standard Landau level problem. Two-dimensional electron gas with external magnetic field. If we pick this Landau gauge, then the wave function is extended along the x direction, and momentum along x direction is a good quantum number. And wave function along the y direction has Gaussian shape. And the peak of the wave function is determined by the momentum along the x direction. So momentum along x dictates the average position of the wave function along the y direction. From this wave function, you can see that the average width of the wave function given by some value of momentum is of order LB magnetic length. Let's take it to be one. And the distance between two consecutive peaks is inversely proportional to LX. So when LX is very small, the distance between two peaks is very, very large. So the overlap between them becomes smaller and smaller. All right. We know that the Laughlin state is an exact eigenstate of an ideal Hamiltonian. We can write that ideal Hamiltonian in this gauge, and it will look like this Hamiltonian. From this value of U of R and S, you can easily see that when LX is very, very small, when we squeeze this torus and make it very thin, then Hamiltonian basically reduces to this very, very simple form. Kinetic term vanishes because we are in Landau level. There is no kinetic term. The only term that we are left with is this very simple Hamiltonian. And we will see that this gives us the right topological order of the problem. This tells us that two electrons cannot sit next to each other, and their distance cannot be even two at one-third filling. So they better be separated by three. So the Hamiltonian in the thin torus limit is given by this simple classical Hamiltonian because it's diagonal. And we obtain three degenerate ground states for this Hamiltonian. If we put one electron here, then we cannot put electron here and here, but we can put another electron here. And if we translate this pattern, we obtain this one, which is another eigenstate of the problem, and also this one. So we obtain three eigenstates for that Hamiltonian. And this tells us why the ground state degeneracy of Laughlin state on torus is three. And how about excitations? So if we have this pattern that every two electrons have distance three, so I have one electron here, no electron, one electron here, then we can disobey this rule and insert a different pattern of a different ground state inside this pattern and obtain excitations. Because now these two electrons, the distance between these two electrons is 4, and distance between these two electrons is 2, instead of being 3. And everywhere else, we have satisfied the rule. Now let's find the charge excitation of this problem. Every 3 consecutive orbitals contain exactly 1 electron. So here, for these 3 orbitals, there is only 1 electron. And also for this, we have 1 electron. But at the domain wall, this rule is not satisfied. We have 3 consecutive orbitals with no electron. And according to Su-Scherfer counting, this carries 1/3 of electric charge. And at the end of the domain wall, we have 3 consecutive orbitals, but with 2 electrons. And again, according to that rule, the electric charge at that point is minus E3rd, or 2E3rd, if you like. And based on the Hamiltonian, if we put 2 electrons with distance 2, the energy cost is U2. So the energy of this state is U2 above the ground state. So the bulk gap in this simple picture is given by U2. So U2 determines the gap. And good. So if we insert 0, 1, 0, 0, 1 pattern inside 1, 0, 0, we can excite two local excitations, one here and one here. So we can write it as V1 at I times V1 at J dagger. Okay? But the charge of this excitation is 1 times E3rd, because we start with ground state type 1, and we put ground state type 2 here. If we put ground state type 3 here instead of 2, then the charge excitation here is 2E3rd, here is minus 2E3rd. I mean something like this. Because here, we have 4 orbitals with no electron. Okay, how about the bilayer? Let's go back to our original problem. For the bilayer, if tunneling is much smaller than the bulk gap, much smaller than U2, then we can treat the two layers as independent and decoupled layers. And the ground state is labeled by 2 numbers. One number determines the top layer, and the second one determines the bottom layer. And let's represent the state with this simplified notation. And for excitations, we can excite either the top layer or the bottom layer. So excitations carry 2 indices, the layer index and also the charge index. So in this way, we can obtain excitations. Sure. So if you have one there, if in every 3 consecutive orbitals you have 1, then the charge background is 0. If you have 0, then charge deficit. Okay, for the other extreme case, that tunneling is much, much larger than U2 and U1. In this case, we better start with the perturbation. This is not perturbation, this is the dominant energy term. And let's first diagonalize this term. If we diagonalize this term, we have 2 eigenstates, the symmetric and antisymmetric. The energy of this symmetric state with respect to this Hamiltonian is minus T, and energy for this is plus T. This is higher energy state. We can remove that from low energy sector and replace electron operator only with C plus. If we keep this operator, then the Hamiltonian, the whole Hamiltonian, can be simplified in this form. This is exactly the same Hamiltonian we started with, except that the feeding factor is 2/3 instead of being 1/3. So if you make a particle hole transformation, you obtain 1/3 Laughlin state. Anyways, this Hamiltonian describes the particle hole conjugate of 1/3 Laughlin state. So that's the extreme case. Okay, now about the interesting part. When tunneling is not very large, and it's not very small. So tunneling is larger than the bulk gap and smaller than the U1. So in this case, Let's focus on these four patterns. These are connected by tunneling. For example, if this electron hops from bottom layer to top layer, we obtain this one, right? So all these four patterns are connected. And remember, this is not just at site I. I mean, repeat this everywhere, okay? Anyways, so here U1 is the dominant energy scale. Let's find the energy of these states with respect to HU1. HU1 means if you put two electrons next to each other in the same layer, the cost is U1. Here, there are no two electrons next to each other, so the cost is zero, and also for this one. For this one, we have two electrons next to each other. Cost is U1, and also for the fourth one. So these two are higher energy states, so we can use second order perturbation theory and obtain an effective Hamiltonian for this subspace. If we do that, then the effective Hamiltonian is just the transverse Ising Hamiltonian. So we obtain minus J times Sx minus U20 SZSC. U2 comes from this argument. If you put this next to this, then this electron has distance 2 from this. So the cost is U2. But if I put this next to itself, there are no two electrons with distance less than 3, so there is no cost. And this is the origin of this term. This means from second order perturbation, you see that J is T squared over U. This causes transition between up and down because one electron comes down, one goes up. It's the double exchange, right? So you obtain the other one.
So if you put all nine states, you say these four states have a lower energy.
Yes, exactly.
And so in the previous, you have given a choice. Like in the previous slide. Where T is very small, but
T is very large.
When T is very large.
Effective pattern is exactly the particle hole conjugate. So you have 1, 1, 0,
yeah.
One pattern, 1, 0, 1, and 0, 1, 1.
And
Feeding fraction is 2/3.
So this is the effective pattern?
Yes. And has only three degenerate.
From the how reduced from the two layer structure of
how do we reduce
the two double layer
structure? Okay, 1, 1 means when we have something like 1, 1, this actually means one here, plus one here.
Okay, so all the superpositions.
All the superpositions. Exactly. Because I have C plus.
Okay.
It's symmetric. That's
so basically say that I think if T is very large, then effectively these three patterns have lower energy.
Exactly.
Then you'll go to this. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Okay, for this transverse Ising chain, we know that when J is small, system has degenerate ground states, two degenerate ground states. It can be either up everywhere when J is very, very small, or down everywhere. Up everywhere means this pattern. And down everywhere means this pattern, right? And when J becomes larger than U2 over 2, we have just a single ground state. And that single ground state is permanent and unique, right? Okay, now remember that we can shift these, okay? We can shift this because momentum is conserved. And actually, the ground state degeneracy here is 2 times 3. And here is 1 times 3 from this argument. Okay, so we have 6 here, 3 here. But remember that we didn't take these patterns into account. These are not affected by tunneling, right? Because tunneling is not allowed for these. Okay, so other than those 6 degenerate ground states, we have these 3 degenerate ground states initially. So initially we have 9 degenerate ground states. But after the phase transition, we obtained 3 plus these 3 other ground states. These are not exactly degenerate in the thin torus limit, but we have done some ED calculation and DMRG that shows that if you go to the two-dimensional limit, that torus is not thick, I mean LX and LY are comparable, these states actually have energies very close to these ones. So they become degenerate in the thermodynamic limit and two-dimensional limit. Okay, so we have 6 degenerate ground states. 6 is very important here.
A little confused. Here you say there's a 4 pattern which have a low energy.
Right. 6.
No, in the previous slide, you said 4 previous transparency.
Oh. No, not four. No, no, no. No, these are six. I mean, two times three. You can shift this once or twice.
So
I can.
When I do the shifting, you think a little bit.
Because it's. So I can
how
have.
How this up arrow, how they separate. Each up arrow will occupy three things or occupy.
No, just one. But it is fixed. They don't mix with other sectors.
So we'll do a shift, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. So we have TY operator, right, which shifts, and that commutes with the Hamiltonian. And because of that, we have three degenerate ground states, and TY cubed is one.
Okay.
Because of this. So actually, we have six degenerate ground states in this sector plus these diagonal states. So totally, we have six. And six is very important. Because 6 is 2 times 3, right? The factor of 3 comes from, it's important. It uniquely determines the nature of the state. Because 3 is accounted by this argument. That because we have translation symmetry, the ground state degeneracy is at least 3. The other factor of 2 points towards the existence of some non-abelian sector. But our non-abelian sector must have two quasi-particles in it. One is one, the other quasi-particle, let's call it X. So the fusion rule has to be of this type, otherwise it's not non-abelian. And when this fusion rule is non-degenerate, that is N is one, which usually happens in quantum Hall systems, this theory is exactly the Fibonacci theory. These are Fibonacci anions. These anti-symmetric states. You mean this one? Fourth? These. Yeah, okay. If you have longer range hopping, in this limit, these are zero energy eigenstates. Energy for this is minus J, energy for this is plus J. So they lie in between. But if you add some fluctuations, they will merge either with the top one or bottom one. And in numerics, we can check that these actually merge with this one.
But the 4-3 has zero energy.
Right.
And 4-6 has minus
J. Right. 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 Exactly.
So in the limit.
Yeah, in this limit, they are not exactly degenerate. You're definitely right. But if you go to the two-dimensional limit, which is a physical limit, they become degenerate. I mean, ED code shows this trend. This is the picture in the thin torus limit. They are zero energy eigenstates. And yeah, after phase transition. And this is the energy for the ground state for symmetric, and this is for antisymmetric. After you add some fluctuations, this diagonal state becomes like this. That's the trend.
So one way to understand this is that it looks like the nine states separate three groups.
Yeah.
And if the middle group have a lowest energy and other two groups have very high energy,
right.
That's like a two-third state.
Right.
And then if you the chance because the first two group have about the same energy, but the last group have very high energy, then you get a state you want.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the main idea. And anyways, this number tells us that Fibonacci anion must exist. Yes. Two dimension. Okay. So in order to get the effective Hamiltonian in the thin torus limit, I assume Lx is much smaller than Lb magnetic length. If I don't assume this, then I get more terms in the Hamiltonian, right? It's not just that simple. So those terms actually lower energy of this sector. So they become eigenstate. Okay, how about excitations? From excitations, we can find the quantum dimension of these excitations, and we will see that it is actually the Fibonacci number, the golden ratio. Okay, in general, if you want to get excitations, we need to put a different pattern next to this one. But the rule is this. If you want to get the excitations with minimum energy, treat A, B, and C as some hardcore particles. So I have A particles here, B particles here, and C particles here. One of the particles from this side can hop to this side, after which I get A minus 1, B plus 1 here, and C, right? One particle can also hop from B to C, which gives me this pattern. And also from C to next site, which is A, because I repeat this pattern, and I get this one. So if I put this pattern next to this one, or this one, they all give me minimum electric charge, 1/3 charge in this case. For example, let's start with 2, 0, 0. Remember that 2, 0, 0 means this. 2 means I have, let's add 1 and 1, I get 2, right? Okay, so for 2, 0, 0, 1 electron from here can hop to the next site, so I get 1, 1, 0. So if I put this pattern next to this, I get 1/3 excitation, I mean something like this. And for 1, 1, 0, the first one can hop to the second site, after which I get 0, 2, 0. Or the second one can hop to the third site, which gives me this one. So you see this pattern or this pattern, right? This gives me another excitation at a different point. And if I want to excite this once further, one of the electrons hop from this side to this side, which gives me this one. And you can also check this rule for the other one. And how many ground states do I have? How many states? Number of states is actually the number of states in this column. I have 1, 1, 2, 3, 5. Remember the Fibonacci series, it's 1, 1, right? 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, and so on. So you can see that they actually follow that rule. A more sophisticated way of doing this is to build the so-called adjacency matrix. Adjacency matrix tells us the following. Let's start with 2, 0, 0. Everywhere is 0 except for this one, which means I should put 1, 1, 0 next to 2, 0, 0 to get excitation. How about 1, 1, 0? I have 2 ones, which means I can put either 0, 2, 0 or 1, 0, 1 next to 1, 1, 0 to get excitation. So this matrix has all the information. Okay, how about ground state degeneracy? You can easily convince yourself that ground state degeneracy is related to the trace of this matrix raised to the number of quasi-holes that you have in the system. And this grows as the dominant eigenvalue of this matrix times to this exponent. Okay, let's diagonalize this Hamiltonian and obtain its largest eigenvalue. It's exactly the Fibonacci number. So the quantum, and this is exactly the definition of the quantum dimension. Quantum dimension means ground state degeneracy grows as quantum dimension raised to number of quasi-holes. So quantum dimension of E3rd excitation is Fibonacci number. Yes? Okay, you want to find the number of states that you have with NQH insertion, right? So in the previous picture, if you have no quasi-hole insertion, your ground state degeneracy is 1, actually 1 times 6, because you have 6 different sectors. With 1 quasi-hole insertion, you have just 1. With 2, you have 2. With 3, you have 3. With 4, you have 5. It's the Fibonacci series. Okay. Right. What's the use of this? This is actually the fusion matrix of CFD, if you like. Yeah, this is exactly the fusion matrix of conformal field theory. Exactly.
So in this sense, can I interpret like 0, 0 as the maximum to the particle? And the 1, 1, 0 as the insertion of the tau.
Exactly. Exactly. This is not tau, this is sigma related to tau.
Okay, but it's something.
Yeah, so exactly.
0, 0 and 1, 0, 1, these are the two states in the diffusion space of 2 tau.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's the right interpretation. Okay, how about the neutral excitation? By neutral excitation, I mean I want to create ether charge in the top layer and minus ether charge in the bottom layer. The total charge is zero, but it has electric dipole. If you want to do that from this hardcore picture, one electron can hop to the right side and one to the left side. If I do that, I get 0, 1, 1 pattern. And for 0, 1, 1, I have two choices. Either the second one can hop to the right side and the first one to the left side, or the opposite, which gives me these two different patterns. An adjacency matrix in this case is block diagonal. Each block consists of 0, 1, 1, 1. This is much easier to diagonalize, right? And the dominant eigenvalue is Fibonacci number. This is the Fibonacci anion, the neutral Fibonacci anion, the tau that you mentioned. So, and this is the fusion rule of Fibonacci anions, right? Okay, so we know everything about this model from Fintor's limit, except for one thing, and that's the topological spin of these Fibonacci anions. If we can determine that, then we have solved the problem completely. How can we find that? We can use this famous formula. I mean, don't get intimidated. This will be very simple in our problem. So this requires knowing the so-called topological spin of quasiparticles and their quantum dimensions. We have just two quasiparticles, 1 and tau. Quantum dimension of 1 is 1. It doesn't have spin, so spin is 0. For tau, we just computed its quantum dimension. And how about its topological spin? Let's say it's some unknown variable. Plug that into this relation. Forget about the right side. What this relation tells us is that the absolute value of this number is 1, right? So it's a unimodular number. Put it in this relation and solve it just in one line. You get this two numbers. So there are only two choices for the topological spin of tau, either plus 2/5 or minus 2/5. Okay. So we have solved the problem completely because all the quasiparticles that we have are abelians V0, V1, V2 that we have even in 1/3 Laughlin state or its particle hole conjugate, and they carry electric charge. And you can also fuse them with the Fibonacci anion, with tau. So we have tau times V0, we have tau times V1, and tau times V2. And how about the topological spin? For these abelians, we know what their topological spin is, and we just computed the topological spin of Fibonacci anion, so we know everything about this. And also the quantum dimension. F means the golden ratio, Fibonacci number. Okay, so if we take plus sign, we obtain a fermionic theory. If we take the minus sign, we obtain a bosonic theory. That's actually the Gaffneyan state, which has been shown to be gapless and doesn't describe a unitary conformal field theory. Okay, how about the central charge? From that formula, we can also find the central charge. Central charge of this theory is 14/5. Okay, we can see from this, 9/5 plus 1 gives us 14/5. And these fusion, so we have fusion rules, we have quantum dimension, electric charge, everything. This matches exactly with the fusion rule and other properties of this field theory, SU2 level 3 times U1 level 6. And from level rank duality, this is equal to the right side. Okay, so the first method gave us a very good picture. How about other techniques? I will try to be quick for the other.
So technique. Before the other technique, what do we conclude from the first part that we have from the determinant?
Yes, it means we have 6 quasiparticles. So if you wrap it on torus, the ground state degeneracy is 6. 3 of them are abelian, 3 are non-abelian.
Is that the tensor product of two theories?
Yeah, it's actually tensor product of Z3 theory with 3 quasiparticles times Fibonacci anion. Exactly.
I mean, do we need to know more? Or that's it. I mean,
that's it. That's but if you don't believe in thin torus limit, or if you have some questions,
so
energetic questions.
So where do we have questions about this?
Sorry?
What is it that we
one question can be about this. So if you don't do ED or DMRG some reliable method, then one may ask why you take this to be degenerate with this. The interest limit doesn't tell us whether this merges at the end with this or this. For some value of
hub.
No, no. This actually has a function of hopping.
Yeah.
Okay, for different values of hopping. What I'm saying is, if you take the thin-torus limit with just direct hopping between top and bottom, this picture is not conclusive. I mean, I assume that I can take these two branches as ground state, but who knows? Maybe it gives us a different answer. Fortunately, we have done ED calculation, and we are certain that these two will merge at the end.
You said that for sufficiently large coupling, you went to this conjugate.
Yeah, if coupling is very, very strong, I know that I only have this. And initially, I had all these three. But do you know from this picture, from this simple picture, that we have just one phase transition or two phase transitions? I think it's difficult to answer.
I definitely don't know the answer, but I'm saying that then what you want to argue is that for some given values of some range of parameters of values of t,
mm-hmm.
and when you go away from the thin cylinder, you'll be in that phase where.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think so. Maybe helpful to go back to the time state.
Yeah. I mean, that's
yeah,
one.
Yeah. So I think that if all the nine states have about the same energy that you generate, you say, okay, it's a one third of fast, one third.
Yeah, that's the zero.
That's a no coming.
Yeah.
Then if the middle three states have a lower energy, the other six states have lower energy, then like a two third state.
Right.
Now here he started is if the first six states have lower energy, other two have a higher energy. So the related question, maybe related to your question, that how about if you take the last
You also get, you mean this one?
Yeah.
Okay, I've done some calculation for that case, and quantum dimension is 2.
Huh?
Quantum dimension is 2 in that case.
I see.
Yeah.
So there's an issue. Can you play this game like that? If you take the last 6 states as the lowest energy state,
right.
Whether that corresponds to something sensible in 2 dimensions. Whether the fusion rule and other things, I don't know.
I've just computed the quantum dimension of quasi hole excitation, and quantum dimension is 2. It's square root 4, 2.
Sure, I see.
Yeah.
So maybe
it's life.
But what that's also my question is that this is a very, very nice approach. But maybe you need a little bit of luck. That's sometimes when you group certain things together, you get a very nice theory. So that means this one-dimensional pattern indeed have a two-dimensional quantum power state as correspondence. But I'm not sure if you group this 1D pattern in arbitrarily, there's maybe sometimes 1D pattern just 1D pattern never corresponds to real 2D states. And here maybe you need some.
So for the generalization part, I will show you that when you have k layers of 1nth Laughlin state and you mix them in this way,
yeah.
You get SUN level k algebra. So we have checked that, and that actually reproduces all the fusion rules and things. Yeah.
But actually, my question was
mm-hmm.
simple. So you tell us that somewhere in some intermediate value of the hopping
right.
between the two layers,
yes.
that there is this phase.
Yeah.
And that we have to believe that there are arguments from exact normalization and DMRG that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But how reliable are these in the following sense? That you have two phase transitions nearby.
Right.
At least on those near those points you have diverging correlation length.
Okay, so bulk charge gap does not close at those points. That's something good. Only neutral sector closes. And all divergences are related to something like dipole correlation. I will talk about it later. But yeah, the bottom line is that I'm not very comfortable with this assumption that these two are degenerate. At least a priori, we don't know whether they are or not. So I wanted to check whether other methods can give me the same answer or not. And for that. They're almost degenerate. What I'm saying is that when you increase the sample system size and electrons, they become closer and closer.
But this will be for some particular values of the hobby.
No. For any, okay, I can.
You have
some phase diagram. Okay, I can show you the phase diagram. So relative to the ground state. Initially, I have three branches, all degenerate, something like this. 3 times 3, hopping. Yeah, we will hopping. This is the hopping, and this is the energy, and this is my bulk gap. Okay, bulk gap is like that. So initially, I have 3 times 3. This is for particular value of total momentum. I have three branches. For this, at some point, I get only 2 branches, 2 times 3. So ground state degeneracy is 6 here, 9 here. The gap in the bulk doesn't close. This is okay. We have a similar situation in Mott insulator phase, right? Which you have spin charge separation. A spin can have its own gap. Charge can have its own gap. And the gap of real electrons is the convolution of the Green's function of these two. And if you do that, the gap is the sum of gap in this sector plus that sector. So the neutral gap closes, but the charge gap does not. And the physical gap is the sum of these two. Even in experiments, people don't see gap closing.
Yeah. I think that if you really go to a large system, why expect to see at a transient point about gap closing?
Yeah, maybe. The system.
From a very, very large system, you can have a two gapless neutral excision created.
Right.
That's the main bring that. But maybe the system too small to not accommodate the two neutral excisions.
Right.
So you only see the splitting.
Yeah. And finally we have 1 times 3, 2 times 3, and here we have 3 times 3. I mean this is our numerics.
Lines that you are drawing.
Sorry?
These lines that you are drawing are
Yes. 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 I can let me show you that. Okay, yeah, I have hided that. So let me unhide this so you can see this, okay? Yeah, this is the preliminary result. I mean, we have better results now, okay? This is what
but
we get.
But this is
not conclusive?
No. Okay. The reason is that to really see the conclusive, one should see the, one hope there's a bulk gap. You can identify from transition point.
Right.
And you hold the system large enough, you start to see the bulk gap from the beginning and collapse near transition point.
Yeah, maybe this is due to the small size of this.
I don't know whether that's possible. There's a first order phase transition. Yeah, maybe that's.
Yeah, there is. That's another possibility that we thought of. Yeah. We have competition between different ground states, and one becomes higher energy.
Yeah, that's
that's another possibility. Exactly. Yeah, that's another possibility. Okay. So, anyways, let's talk about this Chern-Simons gauge theory. Okay. All right. So for Chern-Simons, I will use the parton construction approach. For 1/3, the main idea is that we can write electron operator as bound state of 3 partons, each carrying 1/3 of electric charge. And 10 minutes. Okay. Yeah. That's enough for me. Okay. Yeah, because I don't need to go into the third method. So electron operator is the product of these fermions. These fermions can be imagined as 3 complex coordinates. So electron operator is the volume of that complex coordinate, right? And we know that volume doesn't change under rotation. So electron operator has SU3 symmetry because we can make SU3 symmetry on that complex 3-dimensional coordinates. Okay, so we see this SU3 gauge invariance. That's local symmetry. Another idea is that feeding fraction and also ground state degeneracy depends on the charge of quasi-particles. So if ground state degeneracy for electron operated with charge 1 is 1/3, then you can easily show that the Fitting fraction for charges of 1/3 is 1. So they fully fill the lowest Landau level, and we obtain a gapped state for these partons. So the wave function for them is this Slater determinant, right? The full Landau level. And the wave function of electron is the product of them, and they are at the same point. So it's just psi 1/3 cubed, which gives us this, exactly the Laughlin wave function. Okay, how about the low energy theory? If we integrate out these gapped fermions, because they fully fill the lowest Landau level, we obtain SU3 level 1 Chern-Simons gauge theory. Why SU3? Because we have this local gauge theory. And how about the HCFT? For HCFT, we have 3 fermions. Each have 1 edge state. So we have 3 chiral fermions. And we know that 3 chiral fermions generate U3 level 1 for us. In general, when we have N fermions, they generate UN level 1 algebra for us. But SU3 level 1 subgroup is redundant because that's a gauge theory. That's not physical. So we have to get rid of that. So HCFT is described by U3 level 1 mod SU3 level 1. And this is from level rank duality. You can check that this is exactly U1 level 3. So this reproduces the known result of the system. That's the sanity check. And we can apply this to our problem, the bilayer system. For bilayer system, when tunneling is 0, you have SU3 up cross SU3 down symmetry. So this is the symmetry of the problem. And the Lagrangian, the Chern-Simons Lagrangian, is just the sum of these two SU3 level 1s. Okay? Now imagine we have interlayer tunneling. Because of interlayer tunneling, we can have these operators condensed. So one electron in top layer, one parton, in the bottom layer can be annihilated and created in the top layer. So anyways, because of tunneling, this operator can condense. But condensation of this operator, which carries charge under both up and down SU3s, and it actually couples to this gauge field, Higgs this field. So in the Higgs field phase, this doesn't fluctuate much. So we can say A up minus A down is 0. They are equal to some other gauge field A. And if we replace this constraint into this action, level becomes 2 instead of 1. So we obtain SU3 level 2 Chern-Simons. Okay? So this is good. How about the edge? For the edge, we have 6 fermions, 3 in the top layer, 3 in the bottom layer. So the algebra that they form is U6 level 1. And the subgroup SU3 level 2 is redundant because it's a gauge theory. So in order to find HCFT, we have to mod U6 level 1 by SU3 level 2. And if we do this, remember, we had this before. This is equivalent to SU2 level 3 times U1 level 6. It's exactly the same result that we obtained there. And the central charge is 9/5 plus 1 is 14/5. That's another number. How about the wave function? Okay, electron operator, when tunneling is included, is the product of these new partons, these symmetrized partons. And the symmetrized partons is this. Each parton lives in a Landau level with Chern number 1. But when tunneling is included, they have access to both bands. So they actually live in a band with Chern number 2. So we have 3 fermions, 3 symmetric fermions, living in a band with Chern number 2. And this has just a single SU3. Okay, if we integrate out these fermions, what we obtain is SU3 level C. C is 2 here, Chern-Simons action. So this is another way of seeing this SU3 level 2. How about the wave function? So wave function is wave function of these partons raised to the power of 3 because we have 3 of them. But what is the wave function for each of them? This is very similar to the orbifold construction. wave function for them is the product of Landau level wave function for the one of them times the other one, but we have to symmetrize, okay? And the wave function of the Fibonacci phase is just this wave function cubed. And Yi Zhang and Ashwin Vishwanath have studied this type of wave function before. For example, they can find the topological entanglement entropy of the state, and they obtain this quantum dimension. Remember, we had three quasi-particles, abelian with quantum dimension one, and three with Fibonacci number. So they see this. Okay, if we want to compare with previous results, the Z4 wave function was this. We first cube wave function and then symmetrize. Here we first symmetrize and then cube it. The subtle difference can give us very different answers. All right, so I will not talk much about the coupled wire construction. The main idea is that a fractional quantum Hall can be imagined as two splitted quantum Halls plus backscattering. If we add backscattering, we can gap out the common edge and we obtain a system with just chiral edge at this boundary, right? So as long as topological behaviors is concerned, these two behave in the same way. And we can repeat this, and if we repeat this, then at the end we can map the quantum Hall to these coupled 1D chains with backscattering. This is the quantum Hall, single quantum Hall. And we can see why they are gapped. So for a bilayer system, the picture is a bit messier because we have two right mover modes in this side and two left movers in this side. But they're connected by intra-layer tunneling, blue to blue and black to black connection, and also inter-layer tunneling. Okay, when inter-layer tunneling, when intra-layer tunneling is strong, we can gap them out. And what we obtain is two independent Laughlin states, easy to understand. When the opposite happens, when inter-layer tunneling is very strong, we gap out this edge with this edge and also this with this. We also have a good understanding of this. This is the particle Hall conjugate of the 1/3. But what if we have both? When we have both interlayer and intralayer with more or less the same strength, there is an obstruction for gapping out these edges. And there is a chance that they remain gapless. Okay, if we study this more carefully, what we obtain is an effective Sine-Gordon model. And the Sine-Gordon model is known to be, so when we have just G1 term, that means we have intralayer tunneling. When we have just G2 term, we have interlayer tunneling. When we have both equal, then the system is critical. And it's described actually by some CFD because it's critical. And Loschaminant has shown that for this particular theory, it's described by Z3 power fermion CFD with central charge forfeit. So if you have inter and intralayer tunnelings, we get these power fermion modes. And if you do that for the bulk and then couple these things together, at the end, we can gap out everything in the bulk except for the outermost edges. So we obtain a chiral edge with central charge 1 plus 1 plus 4/5. So central charge is 14/5. And it's described by SU2 level 3 cross U1 level 6, the same thing. Okay, for the experimental probes, if you want to detect this phase transition that I talked about, past experiments have shown that charge gap does not close at all. So charge gap is non-zero everywhere. And phase transition that I discussed about happens in the neutral sector because tunneling has nothing to do with the charge sector. So if we want to target the system, we must look at the neutral excitations. And Fibonacci anions, if you remember, were these electric dipoles and these excitons. And dipole-dipole correlation diverges at the critical point. So if we want to see them, we need to design an experiment to detect this divergence. For example, surface acoustic phonons can couple to these electric dipoles. and they may detect this phase transition. Other famous experimental probes for this phase is thermal conductivity, because it can detect the central charge, the C. We can also have edge tunnelings, and at the edge tunneling at zero temperature, we have IV characteristic if we gate the system. The current has this form, and if we don't gate the system, it's at zero bias, but at finite temperature, then the Hall conductivity has this form. And the G of QH for this Fibonacci phase is 7 over 15. For the Laughlin state, it's 1/3, for example. So in this way, and C was 14/5. People may see this, but there is big noise in experiments for both C and these values. So I don't know whether they can see this or not. And another probe can be interferometry experiments, because the Aronoff bone phase that they detect depends on the fusion channel. So in that way, we may detect the non-abelian statistics. And finally, there is a duality between interlayer pairing and interlayer tunneling, because the system has this symmetry, U1 of charge and neutral sector times Z2. When we add pairing, we break the U1 associated with charge conservation. And the electron operator has this form. When we add interlayer tunneling, then we break the U1 associated with neutral sector, because the charge difference between two layers is not fixed. It can fluctuate. So in that case, we broke the U1 associated with spin. And okay, if we change the role of neutral sector and charge sector, actually these two problems get mapped to each other. So they are the same thing, but from different perspectives. So we think inducing pairing is very difficult in quantum Halls, because magnetic field is very, very strong. And usually system is spin polarized, so there is no point at inducing pairing. But tunneling naturally exists in the systems. And we think we may have already realized Fibonacci phase, but we didn't know how to look for it. And okay, if you want to ask the same question for N and L Halperin state, the general case, we can easily see from all the arguments I presented that the algebra and the topological field theory is described by SU2 level N minus L for the pairing, for the tunneling case. And for the pairing case, N and L plus pairing behave like NN minus L plus tunneling. And in order to see this, we just need to make a particle Hall transformation in the bottom layer. And if you have N layers, K layers, each at 1 over N filling, then the algebra that we obtain for quasi-particles, the quantum dimension, and fusions follows this theory, SUK level N times U1 level KN. And as a conclusion, if we add interlayer tunneling to 330 state, we obtain non-abelian state with Fibonacci anions. Fibonacci anions are perfect choices for topological quantum computation. And they are powerful enough for universal computation. And our proposal, we think, is experimentally more feasible compared to other proposals, like we previously suggested interlayer pairing. And experimental probes for detecting phase transition must target the neutral sector. One option can be surface acoustic phonons. And there is a duality between pairing and tunneling. And also, for the general case, we obtain SUN level K. And thank you very much. Which one? After Schoen-Simons? Okay. Sorry, let me. Okay. after, okay.
Yeah,
I said if you first raise psi to 3, that is you get Laughlin state, and then you take the product and then anti-symmetrize, you get Z4 wave function. But if you first symmetrize and then cube it, you obtain wave function for Fibonacci. They look very similar, but they behave very different.
Fine, suggest on the second one.
The second one is Fibonacci.
Yeah. I think both wave functions can be induced by the tunnel, but
yeah.
Maybe the
exactly.
The second one.
Exactly.
No more favorite
than
tunnel.
Yeah. If we
the
can. Okay, the first one had electric charge 1/3. So that was actually a V2 times tau.
Okay,
so that excitation was this one.
Yeah.
It had tau, but it wasn't charge neutral. So you have, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's this. But no, it doesn't. That's not a gauge. I mean, you just have a global Z2.
Yeah,
that.
So, I mean, there's still a global Z2.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's start.
My office is 465. Yeah, I'm in Song 6 office. Thanks for this hospitality.